Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and of course, this is the week before Mother's Day, and we're honoring mothers in various ways this week. And one of my guests decided that she was going to put something out regarding art and grief. Her exquisite book is called Dancing with the Midwives. It's a memoir of art and grief, and I can tell you that the art in this book is absolutely exquisitely excellent. It's just wonderful. Her delicacy of artistic style is just beautiful to look at. I want to welcome to the Donna Sebo Show Anne Faison. Hello, Anne.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is an absolute delight. I am looking right now at not just the cover of your book, but the art that you use for the cover of your book that's on an inside page of four feathers. And they are so exquisitely done. You're a masterful artist. You also obviously love writing, but you've been working as a healer as well in California, and you wanted to explore grief creatively, which I think is one of the healthiest ways anyone can deal with grief, actually with massive changes of any kind in life, is through that creative venue. And you have had some interesting aspects to your journey in life. You have trained under David Elliott, who's been a guest on this show. And tell us how it was that you found yourself as an artist, and you're exquisite in your work. How did you find yourself gravitating into interacting with David Elliott? What was it that caused you to go that direction?
Well, that was about 11 years ago, and I was practicing as an artist. I had some things going, but I was just a little frustrated, a little stuck in my life, a little knocking my head against the wall the way so many people do. And I think so many creative people find themselves in that predicament. I know I run into creative people all the time who are sort of frustrated and not getting what they want. And he works very well with people in that state of mind, and I think he attracts a lot of artists and creative people. And he just immediately kind of opened me up in a way that I saw how to access a deeper part of myself that I wanted to trust more. And he taught me how to do the breathing meditation, and I worked with him, just going to see him periodically for a couple of years, and then I started doing his healer training workshops, which are wonderful. I know he's doing one this weekend in L.A. I started doing those, and then I started, seeing my own clients and holding my own groups. And really one thing that he teaches, and which I firmly believe, is that as I heal others or help other people learn how to heal themselves, I heal myself. Mm-hmm. So for me, my own healing practice, my regimen of doing a breathing meditation daily is really bolstered by the practice of sharing it with others. Yeah.
You yourself went through a situation that I've known many women that have had this experience, and that is that you became pregnant, and then you lost your baby. And so often, people do not have an awareness of how, when you lose a baby in utero, how it can affect you so strongly. Tell us about your experience.
I was taken by surprise, just as anybody would. It was one of those things. I just went to my regular checkup I was planning to have a home birth, so my checkup was with a midwife. And she couldn't find the heartbeat, and so she sent me over to the doctor that was our backup doctor, and she happened to be located in a hospital. So I went and saw her, and she did an ultrasound and determined right there that the baby was no longer alive. What was surprising to me, I think the biggest shock, well, that was a big shock, but the second biggest shock was that she said we were going to have the baby right then. And there was no going home. There was no waiting. That was my first instinct was, why do I have to do this right now?
Mm-hmm.
But there was an urgency for safety reasons, for my own health.
Yes.
So there I was in the hospital, and I gave birth about 6 hours later. And, you know, I think the third shock was understanding that the birth of a baby who has died is incredibly profound. And so I think I went into the whole process with some fear, which is natural. But beyond the fear, I sort of was open, for whatever reason, and I'm so grateful that I was, to kind of seeing the larger picture and understanding that this was a profound moment in my life, that this child had come into my life for a reason, and that she was there to teach me something. And I learned a lot that day about myself, about our family, and about life and death.
This book you put together, and again, it's exquisitely done.
Thank you.
You wanted to be able to leave, if you will, a legacy for women that perhaps have gone through this kind of experience and let them know that, just as you've expressed, there is a gift that comes with the loss. And you have done that so well. Your artistry is so delicate and so refined that your feathers, the items that you have drawn, seem to come alive on the pages. When you had this experience happen to you, you talk about coming to a level of release regarding this very dramatic series of conditions that you went through. And it was a ritual, and you had named the baby. What was the baby's name?
Kiernan.
What is it that was so good about doing this ritual?
You know, it was something that I felt strongly about, not just for myself, but also for my daughter, who was 2.5 years old. I wanted her to understand what had happened. I knew it was a little bit beyond her developmental ability as a 2.5-year-old to understand that the baby that was growing inside me had died and what that meant. And I knew that probably the best way for her, of course it was really good for my husband and myself too, but I was very focused on her, and I very much wanted her to have an understanding of what was happening. And ritual just was such a natural, easy way to bring a child into that understanding.
And what was it that you did?
Well, we had little ceremonies. We started out having them every month on the date of her birth and death. So she was born on January 19th, and so on the 19th of every month we were doing these ceremonies. And we would just gather by our fireplace and light some candles and bring out little mementos that we had that signified her to us. And we would just sort of be there together. And sometimes it was a little awkward and felt a little forced. And other times it was just the perfect thing. We all had a lot of sadness. We all had somehow fallen in love with this baby who we'd never met. And so to understand that that her life had meaning and that she was part of our family on some level and in some way was what we were trying to honor in those ceremonies.
You sat in something called a womb chair. Tell us about that. That's the first time I've ever heard that term applied to a chair. Birthing chairs,
well,
I've heard of. But is it same as a birthing chair?
It has nothing to do with birth or childbirth. It's a modern design chair. And the designer, who I believe was somebody named Saarinen, he he called it a womb chair because it kind of, it just sort of holds you. It's a big, you know, if you think of some modern chairs that are kind of like a big concave kind of circle and you sort of crawl in there, it's sort of like that. And I love that it's called the womb chair because it fit, of course, with the way I was feeling, you know, having delivered this child from my womb and my womb being empty and devoid of the child that I was expecting to bring into the family. It made so much sense for me to feel that kind of cozy feeling in that chair. But yeah, that's what that is. And I just want to say I really appreciate you bringing up the artwork in your comments because, you know, I think so many people are interested in the artwork, but they're not they don't know how to talk about it or ask questions about it. And I just, if I could, I'd love to say something about what you mentioned, which is the delicacy of
yes.
those drawings. And really, the only way I can explain the quality of those drawings that I was able to achieve is that there was a kind of stillness that the grief brought with it. There was so, I think I mentioned in the book, there was that feeling after the baby came that there was nothing important anymore to do. We didn't have to rush around with our lives the way we had been, the way most of us do most of the time. Sometimes when somebody dies, it kind of forces you to just stop everything
mm-hmm.
and kind of
mm-hmm.
let go. And so I was really in that space for many months of not wanting to do anything, just staying home and feeling my feelings. And that's when I was doing most of those drawings, was in that first year. And I think they have that kind of quality of stillness because of the state of mind I was in. To be honest, I'm not sure, and I haven't really tried, but I'm not sure I could draw a feather just the way I did in that time. I've sort of moved on with my artwork. I'm doing watercolors of birds right now for my next book, but they're much looser, they're more colorful, they have a very different quality because I'm in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's a kind of an interesting point to bring up.
Well, that's what makes this book so special, though, because you are relating to that period of time in your life when you have lost a child. And I myself have not gone through that, but I have mm-hmm. known women who have.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a whole new set of hormonal patternings. There's all kinds of things that you go through.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very emotional time
mm-hmm.
for many, many women that
mm-hmm.
sometimes women have had to carry a dead baby for 9 months.
Mm.
And somebody listening to this may say, oh, this is just gruesome, Donna, while you're talking about this. Because it's life. Life is not perfect. Death is
yeah.
a part of life. And
yeah.
there are many children that are never born.
Mm.
And sometimes Mother Nature takes care of a situation. We don't know why. We don't know what the reasons are. And we can intellectualize till the cows come home, and it still doesn't make any difference.
That's right.
And the female, the woman, this is something she's given her sanctuary of self to. That's how I will describe it.
Mm.
And this life is growing in her. And then to find out that life is not there anymore. There's mm. all kinds of things that happen that
yeah.
go on in the head.
And so much what really is what one of my main purposes with this book is to kind of do what you're doing in this conversation, which is to just normalize it. It's a normal part of life. And God knows in the last century we've come so far medically that it's more rare that children die in the womb, and it's more rare that mothers die in childbirth or that children die in the first few years of life. But it still
mm-hmm.
happens quite often, more often
yes,
than
it does.
You would think. And yet, because I think it has become rare, it has also become a kind of a secret that people like to keep. I mean, I can't
mm-hmm.
tell you how often a woman who has seen my book or knows about my experience comes up to me in a social situation and almost whispers in my ear, you know, I had a stillbirth or I had a miscarriage or I had
mm-hmm.
a child that died of SIDS, and they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to make it public, and yet there is this urgency to share. And
mm-hmm.
so my one of my main sort of motivations behind this book is urging people go ahead and share. It doesn't hurt you to share it. It actually helps. It helps a mm-hmm. tremendous amount. And the more we hold it and keep it a secret, I think it really does kind of eat away at us in different ways. And the whole family. And so many instances I've had people say, oh, yes, my mother had a child that died, but I don't remember. I don't think we ever named it. We never talked about it. It becomes mm-hmm. a sort of family mystery that there was a child that died and nobody knows about it because they didn't speak about it. And I think that does a kind of create a picture of death for children anyway, that it's something we don't want to talk about. It's something bad. It's something scary. And for me, this was very important to keep a very open channel of communication with my daughter as we were going through this so that she could learn about one of life's great mysteries, which is what happens when people die. We don't know. Nobody knows. And so we have all kinds of belief systems around that. And I would share those with her and let her kind of explore those ideas. And what felt natural to her is what we would kind of talk about more, you know, that her sister might be up in the sky and that maybe she could talk to her and have a relationship to her.
Mm-hmm.
So those kinds of things I feel very strongly. That was very healthy for her. And to this day, if somebody dies, you know, a friend's grandmother died recently, she's just very comfortable talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
And I think that's healthy. I really do. I think mm-hmm. that when we try to sterilize life and say these things just don't happen or I don't want my children to know that this is part of life, mm-hmm. I don't agree with that at all. I think whether it's the death of a pet, whether it is circumstances like yours, a death of a family member, these are things that for some reason we have a society that tries to cover everything with what I call powdered sugar. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, it's not. It mm-hmm. is a part of life, and it is not necessarily always pretty. But
yeah.
if you're able to talk about it, if you are able to discuss it without any kind of ridiculous nonsense, mm-hmm. children are able to adapt so readily, it's not even funny.
Oh, yeah. They only respond to your baggage, I think. So if
mm-hmm.
you have a lot of fear around it, then they will too. But if you can be open and present with it, they're not going to be scared of it. They're just going to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is so interesting to me about, there's a piece in the book about a little incident that happened a couple of years after the stillbirth when we were at a friend's house. I was with both my girls. There were a bunch of girls over, and a dead bird appeared on the walkway in this woman's backyard where we were guests. And all the kids were so excited, you know, wow, it's a dead bird. What should we do with it? What happened to it? Is it sleeping? What are we going to do? You know, they were so curious and all in a flurry. And it was just so interesting to me to watch this other mother. You know, she dealt with it her own way, how she was comfortable, which was she very swiftly buried it. And she talked about it in a kind of a very gentle and sing-song way. But in some small way, she was kind of covering it up. She was kind of in a hurry to kind of get this out of the picture. And the girls, all about between the ages of 4 and 8, I would say, were just so curious. They had so many questions they wanted answers to, you know? And so
mm-hmm.
we just kept talking about it. And I love that they're just, all it is really is curiosity for them. And they have a feeling kind of that they have a right to know. They know how important this is. They know that death means something to them, and they deserve to know about it.
Absolutely. You
yeah.
use the story of the butterfly, and you have some exquisite artwork with the butterfly and a limb with a cocoon that's on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're all familiar with the fact that the butterfly is a caterpillar first, goes into this cocoon, goes mm-hmm. through a phenomenal metamorphosis, and comes out this magnificent creature we call the butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an awesome process, but it is a process that is very labor-intensive for the butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
That butterfly is totally confined. That butterfly has to subsist on whatever it subsists on. And before it can have its freedom, the butterfly's got to go through the entire process that's necessary. If someone tries to shortcut it, it creates a weak butterfly that dies.
Mm.
All of this is so significant in symbology. because this is a reality of life. Now, you yourself went through all of these various experiences with the loss of the child, and you were blessed with being able to get pregnant again, and you had another child, and it was a very healthy child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So because of your making peace with what went on in the one loss, it made the birth of the other child much richer because mm-hmm. of the processes you had put yourself through.
Yes. I mean, as a first-time mother, you know, I had no idea how naive I was. Of course, when you have a child, your first child, you learn so much. The learning curve is incredibly steep, and you are changing very rapidly. But when we had our second child, Kiernan, the stillbirth, I realized immediately how naive I had been as a parent already. I was like, oh my gosh, I never considered this possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so with my third, Francis, you're right. I mean, the pregnancy was such a different experience because I had already been through one live birth and one stillbirth. I had a lot of experience. But also, I just, as you say, I really appreciated the blessing of it and the kind of the weight of it and also the tenuousness of it on a whole another level, you know. And, of course, naturally, I had a lot of fear through her pregnancy. That was just, I knew that was going to be part of it, and it was. And I just really dealt with that fear. I wouldn't let it eat me alive, and I wouldn't push it away. I just really tried to face it as much as I could. And it definitely took some courage. I had a lot of support from my husband and all my friends and my family. But she turned out to be just perfect and an easy birth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you have poetry throughout your book. You have different levels of yourself that you bring forth in this publication. And your daughter, Frances, Grace was your first daughter, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Frances is the wonderful child that you had. Both of these little girls are just fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
But you also talk in your book about what it is like having a little one and how rapidly they grow.
Mm.
And you're at a puppet show.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that it won't be long before she's not going to need you the way she has needed you in her early time of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she's going to outgrow your lap.
Yeah, it's the loss of...
It's very, very real, the realities that you share in this book.
Mm. It's really the loss of the baby again, and that's what I realized in that moment was, you know, I had lost the one baby before I even met her, but as Frances was growing up, and I knew this was it, I knew I was not going to be having another child after her, it's the loss of that baby. She was moving into her sort of toddlerhood, and I just realized, yeah, this baby is gone. It's time to let go of the baby, and just how hard that is for a mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something about the baby that is so precious, and yet it's very short-lived. You know, it's maybe 18 months, and they're really no longer a baby anymore.
That's right. Sometimes it's less than that.
Yeah.
I also really appreciate the tenderness that you share about your husband and what he went through.
Mm.
And I think too frequently there is an ignorance regarding the way men can respond to the loss of a child as well. Now, it's different. They're not the ones that are carrying the baby, nourishing the baby, you know, through that period. But it was a very, very significant event for him.
Absolutely. And it was the first time that he had lost a family member, a close family member. Both his parents are alive, grandparents, you know. It was really his first experience with death. And so for him, it was very eye-opening and life-changing and transformative. Yeah. You know, I had lost my mother as a teenager, so I felt, in a way, when Kiernan was born, I almost felt like I knew something about it. I knew something about grief, you know, grief was something I was very familiar with. I had spent many years of my adult life kind of unraveling my own grief experience as a teenager. And so in a way, I felt I was in familiar territory, where for him, it was all new territory. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, I kind of felt like I could be not a teacher, because you can't teach anyone how to grieve, but I could be a kind of a support, that I wasn't so out of sorts that I needed all his support, and he wasn't so out of sorts that he needed all my support. So we just really gently supported each other, though for each of us, it was a very different experience, and we had to work through that and really respect the differences in our experience and try to understand each other, and also just accept that there were going to be some things we couldn't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I so appreciate the way you put all of this together. And I think that Kiernan, and that was in fact the name that your husband had chosen for the baby that ended up being stillborn, and that was another thing that affected him very deeply. But here you are with this wonderful book, and though it is dealing with this loss, your book is filled with a great deal of hope. And I think the way you presented it with this delicate, exquisite artwork, as well as the sharing of your feelings and trying to express what your husband went through, your working with your little girl, and then, of course, you're eventually having another little girl, Frances, who is just a beautiful child. Both of these children fill your life a great deal, but there will never be a time when you're not going to think about Kiernan as well, even though that was a daughter that did not come in to play for a longer term. She was a part of your life, and your family has been able to honor her in a special way. So she did bring a tremendous lesson of wisdom and expanded your world, the life of your family, and now you've put it in a book form so it can perhaps open up and expand a world of someone maybe someday that might have this experience, or someone that knows of someone that goes through this experience. And your art is just exquisite. Is there a website that people can check out to find out more about what you do, as well as this book?
Yeah, there is a website that's devoted to the book called dancingwiththemidwives.com, where I just put up events and little information about the book and how you can order it. And then another website that I started called Art and Grief, just the way it sounds, ARTANDGRIEF .com, is a place where I'm exploring just ideas that I have about how creativity and grief really help each other to flourish. And as you said in your opening remarks, I am a strong believer that creativity is really the best route for healing any kind of grieving experience. And but you're right, any kind of life-changing experience is greatly improved by being creative with it. And just on that note, I want to say, you were saying, you know, Kiernan will always be a part of your life. I didn't really realize it until I was holding the finished book in my hand. Once it came back from the printer a couple of months ago, that she really is this book, and the book really is her. And in a way, just being able to make this book and to put it out in the world, that's her life. You know, that's what has become of her life. And that she chose to be a book instead of a person. I really feel very strongly that was sort of her choice, and I was just the channel for that to come through.
I agree, and it's just exquisite. It would make a wonderful gift for anyone whose heart needs to be touched, so that they know they're not alone, so that they know that this is a process they can go through. And they can gain the gift and the pain and the experience can become richer than they ever imagined, because you definitely, through what you've done, enriched your own experience and went through a healing.
Yes.
Which is quite profound. Dancing with the Midwives, a memoir of art and grief by Anne Faison. And you can check out dancingwiththemidwives.com. Also, check out artandgrief.com. www.thebestofyourself.com. Both of these websites, I think, would empower anyone. If you're going through some challenging times, art really is a phenomenal way to get in touch with release and obtaining peace in a very special way. Happy Mother's Day to you, Anne, and
thank you.
I wish you the best. Anne Faison has been my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo. I know we've got a caller on the line. What I'd like to do is give you the phone number before we go to the caller, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. That's a toll-free number from anywhere in the world. Before I go to my caller, also I want to let you know, for those of you up in the far north who are listening to the broadcast, I'm going to be up in Fairbanks in Anchorage, Alaska next week. So you'll be hearing broadcasts from those two locations, but I will be there also available for private appointments with people. And if you'd like to touch bases with me while I'm there, call me at my office, 800-872-8852. All right, let's go to our first caller who has been waiting so very patiently. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. This is Annette, and I'm calling from Anchorage.
You're calling from Anchorage. I'm going to be up there next Wednesday evening, and I'll be there through Sunday. Is it warming up there? Are you guys thawing out a little bit?
Oh, yeah, it's great. We're having some decent weather. It's the snow is pretty much gone, so it's definitely springtime finally.
Oh, that's terrific. I'm looking forward to coming up. Springtime is just an incredible time up in that part of the country. All right, let's get down to business with you, dear. The first thing that I am looking at, Annette, is the word intensity. I really feel that you've got a number of projects simmering right now, and you are doing a very good job of monitoring each of these projects. I'm a little concerned, though, because I'm seeing you eyeballing another project that you might want to add. And the image I'm getting is symbology. It's like a stove. It's only got 4 burners, and it's like you want to use a number 5 burner, and you don't have one. So I would say don't add anything yet. Make sure you take care of everything that's going on. Be consistent with that. And when one of your projects starts ending, then what I want you to do is then look at bringing in another one, if that's what you desire. You like having more than one thing going on. You don't want to get bored, which is fine. But I am looking at a very intense year here. I just don't see you're having a lot of free time for yourself. So if I could encourage you to give consideration to you, I would say have some time out sessions. We're always so good about telling kids time out. Usually it's because they've been mischievous. But I want to say, I want you to have some time out for yourself. And I want you to schedule it. If it's a day a week, if it is an evening, whatever, maybe it's just a girls' night out once a month, however you choose to do it, you really need to do that for yourself. Otherwise, you're going to get some funny moods, and you're just going to feel so exhausted. You're not going to feel refreshed. You need to have break time. And maybe it's going out with, like I said, a girls' night out. Maybe it's watching cartoons and wearing your bunny slippers. I don't care what it is that you do. But you need to do something for yourself, because otherwise you are not going to totally burn out, but you are going to be so exhausted that you're going to get cranky and you're just not going to be productive. You're not going to see yourself doing what you need to do for yourself. And money is going to be okay. You're not going to be pleased with a lot of excess. But you're going to have a good balance. So don't stress yourself over the money. Just use good sense. Don't overextend yourself, and you're going to be all right. Do you have a question for me?
Yes. I have, you know, this past year has been a really tough time for me, losing my uncle and doing his estate. And it's been a really difficult year this past year, and so now I'm looking forward to a better year, and the thing that I'm looking at is possibly adopting children with my husband. Unfortunately, he just lost his job, and I'm kind of concerned about finances. I'm also looking at doing an elective surgery later this fall, and I'm also a part-time college student, and my life is busy, and I work full-time, so I'm just trying to see, where do you see myself this coming year?
No wonder you need time off every once in a while. For heaven's sake, my goodness. All right, let me encourage you to give some consideration and again, this goes right along with the analogy of the stove and the pots on the stove, and you don't have a fifth burner here that you can add another project to. I think that your home will be ready for a child, but I don't know that it's right now. I would like to encourage you to continue your education, to finish that, to take care of whatever else of a basic nature that needs to be done. If there's still some loose ends with your father's estate, whatever you've got going on there, take care of that. But you need to give some time to yourself, because you are juggling so many things right now. If you don't put yourself into a positioning where you have a sense of harmony, even if you were to bring a child into your space, there wouldn't be any joy. There would not be this wonderful opportunity for you to just be in the harmony of having the family. So I'm not concerned. I think that you and your husband will have children in your home. I'm looking at two. There's a possibility of a third child, but I'm not absolutely sure about the third one. But I am looking at two children. So I want you to know you're going to have the family that you so earnestly desire. But let's take it easy right now. You've got so much on your plate. You don't need to add more to it. Contrary to what some people may say, don't worry about your biological clock. It's just fine. You just go ahead.
Okay.
Take care of yourself, be good to yourself, and everything's going to fall into place. And the money's going to be what it's going to be. You're not going to be deprived. You're not going to have a bad life in any way, shape, or form. You just need to use some common sense. That's all. You're doing well there.
Okay.
Don't exhaust yourself anymore. This isn't a marathon you're running. This is life you're living.
Okay.
Do I make sense?
Can you? Yes. Can you elaborate a little bit on my husband's work? future work. You know, it said he lost his job, and so that's a concern for me. I mean, financially we're okay, but I don't want it to be anything long term. But what do you see?
Relax about this. Let him take care of that. He's perfectly capable of finding more work. He knows it. He also knows that he needs to upgrade his skill. So these are things that I would be very supportive with him. Don't get stuck on the treadmill of feeling like you have got to be his mother superior and take care of everything for him. He's an adult.
Okay.
He can think for himself, and he's also going to want to work. You don't have a lazy husband. You really don't. The key is that you just have to be honest with him. You know, if you have $20 to spend on groceries for the week, you say, that's what I've got is $20 for groceries. Sorry, we can't go out to such and such and so and so. This is it. Don't be afraid to be honest with him about these things. He's a big boy. He can handle this. Have more confidence in him. Don't mimic some of the other women that you've known in your life who have tried to be the superwomen, taking care of everything, and not enabling their men to be responsible. Don't try to fix it for him.
Okay.
Be supportive.
All right.
But he's perfectly capable of handling this, and keep him informed.
Okay.
Keep him informed. Let him know, this is what we've got, this is what we don't have. These are our deadlines, and this is what needs to be done. But for heaven's sakes, don't take on anything more yourself, dear. You're just going to burn yourself out. It's not worth it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Donna. I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a good visit to Alaska this week or next week, and thanks again.
Well, you're very welcome, and tell your friends that I'm coming up, so if they need to reach me, all they have to do is call me.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, Annette. Thanks for calling in. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're going to be going on break in just a little bit. Let me give you the phone number if you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Annie Roberts has a delightful poem. Of course, this is springtime. Flowers are coming out. The colors of nature are just exploding everywhere. I love it. And this is what she said. She said, few things in life are more beautiful than a spring day so lush with promise, so fragrant with flowers, so full of life. It's as if, for one brief moment, heaven blooms in all of us. Poetic and beautiful and so true. I think after a long, dreary winter, and here in the Pacific Northwest, we're notorious for the gray skies and the drips that we get all the time. I call it liquid gold, because without it, we wouldn't have the lush green and the magnificent roadies that we've got. The plants just soak it up. Of course, those of us here figure we're never going to die. We'll just rust because of all the dampness. But that's beside the point. The reality is that spring is just liberating after winter. It just makes you feel so good. And, of course, the stores abound with all these beautiful flowers and particular things like daffodils. They perk you up. They just do wonderful things for you. So if nothing else, Mother's Day is coming up. Hey, guys, go on out. And for the ladies in your life, get them beautiful bouquets of flowers, fresh flowers or things that they can put in their garden or maybe enjoy watching blooming in the house, whatever it is just a vibrant, vital time of the year. And it's meant to be enjoyed with gusto, as far as I'm concerned. This is Donna Sebo, 888-815-9756. We're going to take a break in just a moment. Don't forget, tomorrow we've got Danny Cahill. We're going to be talking about Harper's Rules. Who's Harper? Well, Harper is an individual that can tell someone how they can successfully find a good job, but also how to find the love of their life. Want to know more? Hey, you're going to have to listen in tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. All right, I wanted to share a story with you regarding Mother's Day that I thought was pretty special. And it's by Mary Hayes Calhoun Owings. She said, "Life didn't start out easy for me growing up in South Carolina during the peak of the Great Depression." So we know that Mary is of mature years. She said, "My mother passed away when I was 12. My father couldn't take care of me and my brother make a living because it just wasn't possible. So they were sent to live with one of the aunts in the family, and she was, Mary was, and her brother was sent to live with another aunt. And the home that they had lived in as a family was sold, because the father was experiencing very difficult times, and that's the only option that he had. All of the belongings of her mother's disappeared, every one of them. Now, Mary is a woman of 92 years. That's right, 92. Now, she's got a wonderful family. She had four children of her own, three girls and a boy. She's got 14 grandchildren, and she's also got great-grandchildren. Her husband passed away a few years ago, and she said she and her husband had had a tradition during their many years of marriage where they'd invite neighbors and friends over for 5 o'clock coffee and conversation. Of course, there were always cookies and other goodies that went along with it. And many times, her girlfriends would come over to her home, and they'd all have lunch together. She said she just felt that her life was so rich and full because of all this wonderful fellowship that would be within her home and the fact that she had many relatives that liked a similar type of tradition in their own way, and they opened their homes to her and friends did the same. Now, she said, even today at 92, when Mother's Day comes around, she does have some thoughts. And she said, "You'd think at my age it wouldn't make any difference, but it does. I wish that my mother hadn't been taken away from the family so soon." She said, "Whenever I go into an antique shop, I get a little nostalgic." She said, "There are things that I see that remind me of my childhood. It could be a mirror, maybe a cologne bottle. Maybe there's even a set of china that reminds me of dishes that my mother had. Remember, she was 12 years old when her mother died." So recently, she said she was visiting her daughter, whose name is Dee, and it was a nice long weekend, and they were having a wonderful moment where they were just enjoying coffee and some good food. And Dee, her daughter, said, "My mother-in-law bought some china from an estate sale in Pennsylvania." She said, "It matches my decor, but there's only 4 luncheon plates, 4 soup bowls, and 1 bread and butter plate. So I know I wouldn't use it. I thought you might enjoy it, Mom, because you love antiques." Well, Mary was thrilled. She just thought that was fabulous. So her daughter brought it out. They were white plates with pink, yellow, and blue bunches of flowers in the middle. and also around the edging of the plates. And the gold leaf that were on, that was on the edges were worn with having been used so many times with a great deal of love, I'm sure. She said she had only seen china with that kind of pattern once before. She picked up one of the plates, looked it over carefully, and let her fingers run around the edge of the plate over the gold leaf. She asked Dee a question. How did you know? Dee asked her, know what, Mom? She then told her daughter that the dishes she was holding were the same dishes that had belonged to her mother. She said, this was my mother's china. Fascinating story, isn't it? How things will come around and end up in their rightful place in the most unexpected ways. A wonderful, wonderful gift for Mary, 92 years young, of a mother that she lost when she was 12. I thought it was a fabulous Mother's Day story. Well, we've got a great lineup of people coming up next week. Dynamic. It's going to be Byron Janis with us on Monday, Chopin and Beyond. Byron Janis is a world-renowned pianist. He is in his 80s at this time. This man's career history with all of the notables that you could ever imagine, his travels around the world, and his experiences with the paranormal are very gripping. So we are going to be chatting with him on Monday. Oh, and by the way, his wife is the daughter of Gary Cooper. Ah, pique your interest? Then, on Tuesday, we're going to be talking about climate change and the oceans. Dr. John Slade is going to be with us. Then, Bethany Moradian, she is a lady that has got two books, which I think are delightful. One is the Mystery Shopper Training Program. If you're looking for work and you love to shop, this is something you know about. Also, she talks about how she got scammed, so we don't have to get scammed. So we're going to be learning a great deal about those two things. Then we're going to be talking about the Patient's Encyclopedia for Urinary Tract Infections. Now, that may not sound like much, but there are so many things that happen with women health-wise. And this woman, and we'll be going to England to talk with Angela Kilmartin. This gal has dedicated her life to understanding this because it incapacitated her for a lot of years. And then the Silent Voices of the Soul, Robin Leigh Villa, is going to be my guest. This is an intuitive. She is a woman that has put together a book regarding her journey about the development of her own psychic talents. Great lineup of guests next week. I think you will enjoy it. And again, the broadcast will be coming to you from both Fairbanks, Alaska, as well as Anchorage. So I'm looking forward to having you join me. Quickly, I wanted to, before we closed out, I wanted to share something with you that is really light. You know, when we come into the springtime of the year, often we like to prepare ourselves for the fact that we're going to have to be watching our diet. And as I'm looking at the clock, my goodness, I'll have to share this with you later. It's about an asparagus and a pecorino salad, something that's very light, delicious, flavorful, and won't put inches on the hip. So I'll be sharing that with you perhaps tomorrow. You know, there was a little boy sitting on a couch next to his grandma, and she's reading to him. And after she finished her story, he said, if I want to live happily ever after, Grandma, do I have to marry a princess? Don't you just love kids? This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is for living. We all have times when grief will hit us, but it is part of that grief that gives us the gift of understanding that life, again, is to be lived and lived with the richness of understanding and perception that frees us, not victimizing us. This is Donna Sebo. Have a wonderful time wherever you are, and we'll look forward to having you join us again tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.